You're listening to a 4x4 Radio Network podcast.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the Center Steer Podcast, the only Land Rover podcast on the planet. This is show number 43 for October 2016. This is a podcast by, for, and about Land Rover owners, and we are assembled here today. I want you to visit our website, which is centersteer.com, C-E-N-T-R-E, to listen to previous shows. And also for show notes, we will have links to stories discussed today and also stories discussed in the past. We're part of the 4x4 Radio Network, and I invite you to check out the other 4x4-related shows at 4x4radionetwork.com. Thanks for all your comments, likes, follows on Twitter, Facebook, and in emails. I really appreciate getting them. They give us ideas for on the show and for stories and things.
And thanks for supporting us on Patreon.
We recently launched our Patreon, and Patreon is a simple way for you to support the podcast. It will help us keep us going. We needed another microphone today, and it'd been nice to have one. We didn't. and also encourage us to do more things. We have some cool rewards, including a special Center Steer sticker, which I've been giving out. And we now have 5 supporters, which I think is really good and amazing to me. So thanks to Steve, Michael, Jack, Oren, and Vasily. I've met Vasily, and so that was nice to do. And Oren has been helping us out in Australia. So thanks to all those guys. Visit patreon.com/centersteer. That's patreon.com/centersteer for all details and to make a monthly contribution. I'm your host, John Costage, and joining me here all the way from Western Pennsylvania on a late Sunday in October 30th to be specific, sitting across from me is...
As usual, I'm Harold.
And after a long hiatus, because you had a baby...
Yes, Mark, and good to be back.
Yes, welcome, Mark.
Getting caught up on your sleep yet, Mark?
Actually, haven't had to lose much yet. Amazing baby, sleeps almost 11 hours a night.
Wow.
And I think the reason that Mark joined us, let's admit it, is because the Bells are staying with me and you want to come meet the Bells.
That is at least 90% of the reason.
Right. We don't come for you, John.
No, of course not. And joining us via Skype, all the way from the Green Mountain State.
Hey, I'm Morgan.
That's it? Just a hey, I'm Morgan?
They do things efficiently.
I don't have a whole lot of other news right now.
All right. Well, you have SiriusParts.com, right?
Kind of cold, drizzly weather. I'm bundled up.
Yes. Morgan is wearing a beanie. Is that what we call them now? And he's upstairs in his office, and he has a beanie on.
Are you enjoying the view of Canada from up there?
It's sort of an easterly view, but yeah, it's nice.
And we also have a special guest today. Joining us is Brian Jocelyn, who is editor of Alloy and Grit, the new Land Rover magazine in the United States. Say hi, Brian.
Hey there, everybody. Great to be here.
Where are you calling from, Brian?
We are at the other end of the state. We're down just outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
Oh, that's exactly where Graham thinks he is.
I can tell you he's not here.
That's true. If you've not been following us on Facebook or Twitter, Graham and Louisa Bell from A2A Expedition.com, I think that's their new website. They have the book We Will Be Free, been on the show several times. Have made their way and have been staying with me for the past week, and so they'll pop in on the podcast here shortly, and they can maybe do a few moments on their new book, which is Travel the Planet Overland. I did get, in fact, the very first copy, which was, yes, I know. And Graham is geographically challenged at times, and he has called this, we're near Philadelphia. No, yeah, you're not. You're near Pittsburgh.
Well, when you come, let's face it, for how far he's gone, it's really not that far outside of
right. But the man has a great, and I even compliment him on his memory. How can you not know that?
And it's all relative.
And you've never butchered a detail, John?
This is not about me. Hey, Brian, thanks very much for joining. This is what we do.
Yeah, no problem.
Hope you know what you got yourself into.
Absolutely.
We'll be nice to you. You're a newcomer.
Yes. Thanks.
I actually got to meet Brian at the Overland Expo, which I should probably spend a moment or two.
And he still agreed to come on our show.
Indeed, he did. In fact, he did. I went to the Overland Expo East, which took place a couple weeks ago down in Asheville, North Carolina. I drove down in my Jetta and promptly wished I had brought the series truck, but 7 hours, you know, in a series truck means 9 minimum. But yeah, I had a great time. That was a really, really neat show, and I did get to meet Brian. Ryan, I got to and Steve. In fact, where is Steve? He's your co-editor, I think.
Yeah, Steve's actually the editor. I'm the publisher, but he is traveling back from I believe British Columbia today. He had other details to attend to and wasn't able to make it in time.
Cool. And I also met up with Terry Ann Wakeman and got to meet up with some other folks, especially authors. And so we have some ideas for future guests on the show. The one that I'm really excited about, I forget the man's name. Damn it. He was a Royal Engineer and headed up the first motorized crossing of the Darien Gap. I got to see his talk and I got his book. So I'm going to get in contact with them, see if I can't get him on the show very soon. Before we get into the news, joining us now in the studio is one, Graham Bell. Graham, welcome to the show. Good to see you in person, brother. I'm glad you're here.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Wonderful. So you have a new book out. Let's spend a few minutes telling folks about the new book and where they can get it.
Okay. The book's called Travel the Planet Overland. It was a Kickstarter campaign that we did a while ago. And yeah, it's beautiful.
It is.
It's really pretty, and it feels good, and it looks good. I mean, I've seen it now for the last week. We finally got our hands on the print, and every time I see it, I go, "Ooh, that's pretty." I'm, you know, not to blow my own horn, but my wife is great. That sounds weird. that might have came out a bit weird. Yeah, so it's 250-odd pages, full-color, hardcover book, and it's basically how to travel the planet overland, and that could be traveling in your state. It could be traveling internationally, off-road, mainly on-road. It covers the whole spectrum from bicycles to the big, you know, Unimogs and those kind of trucks.
Aircraft?
Say what?
Aircraft?
That's not quite overlanding.
Okay. That's over air.
It's like, so boats are out too, no boats?
Boats are in the future, I think. It's a natural progression for a lot of overlanders to go from traveling the world in a vehicle to saying, hey, you know what, a boat might be a good idea because it's very cheap.
I've seen people take the roof off a series truck and make a boat out of it.
That could be one way to do it, I suppose, if you don't like space. But yeah.
So where do folks find the book?
You can find it on our website, www.a2aexpedition.com, and that's two with the numeral two. And, yeah, you can get it there, order it from us. We've got a few extra copies that we've printed out, so the lucky few can get it now. After that, we'd have to do pre-orders or something like that, run promotions and all that. But we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is well worth it, and I highly recommend it to folks to pick up. We did record a special podcast with Graham and Louisa, and we will have that put out soon. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do with it, but a little more extensive discussion since you're here in the studio. Mm-hmm. And you can hear more about the book and their future plans. Their most immediate plans, though, is to travel to Florida, where you're going to rebuild your truck with the assistance, I think, of yourself and your son, right?
Yeah, that's it. We are working with a company called Total Composite. We got Biermark. They do the Land Rover parts, etc. They're on board, and Falcon Tire helping us out with a bit of cash and some rubber. And we're going to get the panels shipped in to Florida. We got friends down there. We're going to go hang out and enjoy a Southern Hemisphere winter, well, as close as we can get. And it's going to be a learning experience. I have to learn how to weld. I have to learn a lot of things, but we're going to do it ourselves, and we're going to make it freaking awesome. It's going to be a live-in, work-in kind of pod. It's going to have, I was inspired by like these Martian moon buggies. And I want something that I can make a pasta in, but at the same time I can work on, I do writing, do videos, do photos, that kind of thing. So that's pretty exciting, yeah.
Good.
Just going back to the book quickly, The Travel of the Planet, the goal of this book is to inspire people. It is not a technical manual. It's got lots of great secrets and ideas in there, but it's not going to bore you. My writing is terrible, but it's good fun. There's a lot of humor. We make fun of people. We make fun of ourselves. We talk about sex and
drugs and rock and roll.
Yeah, all that exciting Overlander crap. Yeah, so that's about it. And then we're going to be doing a vlog of the entire rebuild. So we're going to strip the Defender down from the 130. We're going to be vlogging the entire process as we build her up. Yeah.
Good. And so to see those vlogs, you go out to your Facebook page, correct?
Yeah. It's A2 Expedition, a family traveling the planet overland, something like that.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Thank you. And Instagram, we'll put some bunch of photos up there as well. But mainly we work through the Facebook. It's the easiest medium for us.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on and giving us an update on your situation and where you are. And I was very pleased to have you stay at the house for as long as you have. And I have gotten at least 10 or 15 pounds bigger. So, in fact, I think that's what you're doing now. You're going to go up and make dinner, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm going to drink your Guinness and watch my wife make you dinner. But, you know.
Hey.
I'm going to skip out of the podcast and go drink beer with Graham.
You're more than welcome, Mark. I was a Coors Light man before I got here, and you guys have re-educated me. Yeah.
I think I told you I would.
Yeah, thank you for that. My purse is not going to thank you, but yeah.
All right, thanks, Graham. And we'll speak with you soon. And in addition to the special episode, something I'll put together soon.
Sweet, so. My China. Thank you.
My China. Yeah, I learned that. I learned the phrase, my China. But I'll leave for people to figure that out on their own. All right, why don't we go ahead and move along and get into the news. First up is JLR reports U.S. sales for September of 2016. And sales were very good. We'll just highlight a couple things here. U.S. sales were up for JLR overall 21% from the previous September. Disco Sport continues to grow, up 5%. And this is the Land Rover's second highest September ever for U.S. sales. And the Jag XE Sport Sedan, XF Luxury Sedan, and the F-Pace have all done well, with Jag sales up 168% from September, which is the best they've had since 2003. You said 2003 or 2003? Okay. So things are going well. Things are going well. I should tell you this, Harold. On the way back from Overland Expo, I was coming up the interstate, and I saw an Audi, and I'm like, "Oh, that's a nice looking Audi." And as I get next to it, it was, "Oh, that's an F-Pace."
They're pretty sharp looking.
Yeah,
I
finally
saw one in the wild a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I've seen two now so far in the wild.
Hey, if you like Jags that look like Audis, yeah, sure, fine.
All right. Now, the big news coming out of Land Rover this past month was the debut of the Discovery 5, and that has now, depending on what article you read, it's either a 2017 or a 2018, so I haven't figured out the difference between all that. But so they're coming out with the new Disco 5, and I think I'm going to go right to... there's a 13-minute video that Land Rover put out assessing all the capabilities of the Disco 5. And, they talk about the design being bold and wrapped around and being different. They didn't say that word, but that's what they implied. And
so they didn't actually spend 13 minutes talking about the capabilities. They spent 13 minutes just with hyperbole and...
Oh, no. No. They talk about capabilities. They talk about the features and the capabilities of the vehicle. They talk about the weighting depth. It's actually...
It seems to me they could trim out some of those words, though, and just talk about what it is.
Well, the very beginning, they talk about the design and such of that nature. They do talk about the weighting depth being the best of any Disco ever, and I think they increased it by 43 millimeters or something. But on the design, which is one of the things we've talked about, how they all look alike, I think this continues in that they all look alike.
Right. Yet that's wonderful, isn't it? Or so the video says.
Yeah, indeed. So the thing I found interesting was they revealed this at the Geneva Auto Show, and then quickly after that, one of the first videos I saw was them saying it really does have a stepped roof. Look, and they had to point out that it had that little step, and then like, where? I'm looking for it, and I'm not like, oh, you mean that little like 3 millimeter bump in the two-thirds of the way back?
Yeah, if you have to work that hard to point it out, it's not there.
And I believe, Brian, you actually, as a publisher, I apologize for getting the wrong title for you, as publisher of the new Alloy and Grit magazine, we got some advance notice. Can you share any of that with us?
Sure, sure, I did. I actually had a fairly rare opportunity back in July to go to Sully Hall, and see the pre-production prototypes in the flesh. We got a short design presentation, but actually got to see the mock-ups, the drivable pre-production models in the metal, and they had several other detail mock-ups, their interiors and different treatments as well that were available to see. So we got the full design explanation there, and then got to walk outside and stand next to it, sit in it, and really, you know, get a firsthand look. The unfortunate thing is we were bound by contract not to speak about it until the embargo lifted at the Paris Auto Show. So it was kind of killing us for a while, not being able to say anything, but it gave us time to absorb, all of the new features and the new design and to kind of, reflect on that a little bit. So, I'd be glad to share my thoughts, you know, as you move through that. So.
Well, please do. Now's probably a good time. Did you get to drive it?
No. These were literally, you know, rough mock-ups. They didn't have any of their finished details on them in terms of textures and stuff, but they were drivable platforms, and I believe they were, you know, full body vehicles, so all the, you know, all the pressings were correct and everything. It was a hand assembled metal vehicle, but none to drive. They were driven out for us and put on display. I can say, you know, having seen the prototypes running around for so long, and being able to clearly, you know, tie it back to the concept vehicle back in 2014, it was for me as a Discovery owner, it was a bit disappointing to see some of the details basically just referenced but not carried through. And however, having seen it in person, I can tell you that it definitely has the presence of a Discovery. It does have a more muscular stance. I know Ford Explorer is the common reference point for just about everybody.
We've never said that.
Really? I never thought of that.
No, not you guys, I'm sure. But
no.
Yeah, you know, in person, it looks nothing like that. It has none of that feel. It's a tall vehicle, and in pictures, you really can't get a sense of its size. It's a big vehicle. It's tall. It still has a boxy, narrow kind of overall posture to it, so.
How does it compare to the Disco Sport? My impression would be it's a Disco Sport.
Entirely different. I mean,
really?
No. It's I was trying to pull up some of the figures there. It's actually about as tall as an LR4, give or take, you know, couple tenths of an inch. It's very, very close to the Discovery 4 in its overall size. Let's see. And it's longer overall in length. It's I'm just trying to pull up those stats.
Well, while you're doing that, I know it's certainly lighter than the previous models. They use a lot of aluminum in the construction.
Yeah, 1,000 pounds. I mean, that's significant. Needless to say, and that's always that was always one of the problems with the LR4 was just how dense it is. So yeah, to shed 1,000 pounds by the use of aluminum instead of steel is a major. I think the thing's going to be fantastic to drive both on and off road.
It'll be interesting to see how that translates into durability.
Yeah.
I was also looking at some of the stats here. It has a wing depth of 35.4 inches.
That's incredible for a stock truck.
Yes, which Land Rover's engineering department reckons the new Disco will be better in the rough stuff than its predecessors or any other current sport utility rivals. This is from Autoblog. It's about the same size as an LR4, slightly longer, wider, with 1.5-inch extra wheelbase with a lower overall height. Yep, 1,000 pounds. Dispensing with the body-on-frame architecture of the previous model, other enhancements have helped save 1,000 pounds. And, of course, it's more aerodynamic. I just wonder where they put all the cameras. Apparently, this thing has cameras all around, and wonder, you know, interesting how they shed 1,000 pounds, but yet they've added all this electronic equipment to it to, you know, to do all this electronic stuff. It's interesting how much I could have shed more.
Well, and it is also a 7-seater now, again.
True 7-seater. I sat in the third row, and it is. I think their stat is that it's designed for 95th percentile adult. So, you know, 6 feet, 2.8 inches or something it's designed to accommodate. So it is a real third row back there. You still have to come through the second row, but, you know, they've made that a little easier to manipulate the second row. And, it's not a punishment place at all. It's really a nice place to be.
That's good to hear. It's not a punishment, because I know a lot of those that have those back seats, you have to contort yourself just to get in there.
Yeah, usually the tip off is the 5+2 seating versus seven passenger, and they're calling this a full 7 passenger. Yeah. I think they still reference the Range Rover Sport as a 5+2.
It's interesting how 5+2 does not equal 7. must be that new math they're working with.
That's it, the new math. But the nice thing that Harold, I know this is something he looks forward to. Looks like every passenger will have a USB port, and so you can charge your devices, Harold. There's like six. At least one. Yeah, there's like 12 in the whole vehicle.
All right.
And you can connect 5 devices. I don't get this device connection to the car. I don't. Can anybody explain what that means? So I can connect my laptop. Is this like mainly for the family so they can stream?
I would have.
I believe it's for Wi-Fi. It's like a Wi-Fi hotspot, so that if you want internet, you don't have to have data plans for every device in the vehicle. You can just connect them all to the data plan for the vehicle itself.
It's so that your kids can text to each other while you're on the road, so they don't have to talk to each other.
Well, and it also means you can share locally without going over the internet. So if you have something like a wireless hard drive full of movies or something, you can have your kids stream those. Instead of streaming Netflix over the internet, paying data plans. So some options like that.
All the important stuff for us. Headrest video, I know. well, certainly, what else here? Engine lineup. They're going to have a 340 horsepower 3-liter supercharged V6 is available in all trims. ZF 8-speed automatic with a choice of single or 2-speed torsion-based torque biasing center gearing. Towing capacity is 8,200 pounds.
Nice.
That's gone up a little bit.
That has. I think it was 7,500, wasn't it?
7,500 for most disco variants.
And a 3-liter turbo diesel making 254 horsepower will also be available. And this is Autoblog.
How much torque, people?
It's Autoblog.
Horsepower is meaningless with diesel.
How much torque? Both those engines are basically the same as what's in the Range Rover Sport right now, minus the V8 option. So, the V6 gas engine's 340 horsepower at 6,500 RPM and 332 pound-feet at 3,500. The diesel comes in at 254 horsepower at 4,000 and 442 pound-feet at 1,750. So it will lug.
And the diesel wins.
Yeah.
Diesel always wins on the torque numbers.
Yep.
What kind of mileage?
That hasn't been determined yet, but I would guess you can probably look at the Range Rover Sport and probably be within 1 or 2 miles per gallon.
Again, diesel
you know, a lot of the dimensions are very similar. It's right. Essentially the same architectures, so sure. It's going to be right in line with that.
What is the mileage on the turbo diesel or in the diesel for the Sport? And you have that because I see you're looking at numbers there, Brian.
I'm trying to remember because we had one recently over the summer. I think it was 21 and 29, if I remember correctly. We averaged about 29 miles per gallon in the Sport TD6 that we had.
Beats 12.
It does. It does by a lot.
Indeed. And Roadshow, which is a CNET.com auto site, they had a video. It's about 4 minutes long that talks about the history of all of Discovery. I think it's worth your time to watch. We don't necessarily talk about it here, but it's a nice summation of the history of the Discovery. And we'll, of course, have a link in the show notes. And if you want one, it will go on sale in the United States of America in the middle of 2017. So you're going to have to wait. Prices will start at $50,985.
I'll be waiting a while for that one.
I'm sure the diesel option will be probably another $3,000, is my guess.
That's cheap if that's all it costs. Yeah.
$2,000 difference for the yep.
That's a bargain. That's well
worth
it.
It's not available on the entry level model, but it's available as an option on the HSE and HSE Lux.
Cool.
You're
very nice.
Your son up, Harold. You're going to have one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I could afford one, I certainly could afford that little bit extra and get the diesel.
Right. Yes. I would agree. Yeah, we're all big supporters of diesels here.
I'm not in a position to write a check for that right now. That's for sure.
All right. So if any of our listeners does end up getting a Disco 5 and wants to talk about it on the show, get in touch. We'll be happy to have you on and tell us about it. And if you want to bring it around to Pittsburgh and let me drive it, sure, I'd be happy to do that too. All right, why don't we move on?
Okay. That'll be making its North American debut in a couple weeks at the LA show. So that'll be their first chance to see it in person stateside here. And then naturally, I don't know if they're going to show at Detroit this year, North American Auto Show. They've been bowing out of that. But certainly New York, because it'll be essentially market ready by the time New York show comes around in, I think, April in the spring.
Is it available in Europe? Is it going to be available in Europe before here?
No, the global launch will take place, I think, in the first or very early part of the second quarter of next year, from what I have been told.
Gotcha.
So no one's going to see it in dealers until middle of next year.
Have you or will you get a chance to drive it, a production model?
I certainly hope so. That's my understanding. Yeah, I would imagine we'll probably be invited along to the launch of that.
Good deal.
Well, yeah, we're looking forward to it. Quite frankly, I think it really will be impressive off-road. I have no doubt that, at least under certain conditions, it's going to be one heck of a vehicle. So
yeah, some of the capabilities it has seem certainly interesting, with the cameras being able to see things, and the wading depth, I think, is amazing. That's the one that stood out to me.
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah. Apparently it has sensors, I'm assuming some sort of sonar. It tells you how much water is where, so they'll give you a graphic on the inside screen telling you where the water is. That was kind of interesting. That could be helpful.
It's got some other very interesting, helpful features related to the towing. You can actually, using, I believe, the sort of jog wheel on the center console, you can reverse with a trailer. And it will sort of do the work for you.
You are correct on that. Did you see the more interesting one? It has a hidden hitch.
I missed that. Nice.
You push a button and the hitch drops down and pops out and it deploys the hitch. Plus it'll tell you how much weight is on there, whether it's safe to drive the truck or drive the vehicle, with whatever's being towed.
See, now that's useful. Tongue weight measurement. That's useful.
And it has and it has a sway, detection capability. And if you don't slow the vehicle down, it'll start slowing it down for you to manage the sway of the trailer.
Wow.
So that was impressive stuff. Yeah, the pop-out hitch, I don't know, but, whatever.
I don't care for that.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the whole thing about the tailgate. It no longer has that split tailgate, but they ended up creating a little fold-down table almost in a way. But it does hold 600 pounds.
Well, it's also got the added advantage that if you have a whole bunch of stuff piled up in the back and you open the door, it doesn't just tumble out.
Right, yeah, because it kind of holds in. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
And then you can fold it down into the tray as well, which is nice.
So who's jumping out of a plane and going to use the app to lay the seats down so they can get in? Any of us? Anybody? Anybody want to try that?
If they're giving me a Disco 5 for it, I will.
Yeah, okay.
If you're listening, Land Rover, I'm game.
There you go. Mark Garcia, he'll do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to be the first guy to try that because I don't want to be at 5,000 feet and closing and find out all of a sudden my app lost sync.
That's a good – I like that. That was good. Well done, Harold. That was a good one. All right. Anybody have any final comments on the Disco 5 before we move on?
I was just going to say I thought that the gadget with the wading depth monitor was interesting, but – it's really not the first time they've had that. I mean, my series truck does that just fine. It's called my legs.
there you go. Well done. Well done. It has a lot of tech in it, needless to say. And the one article talked about how they, I guess I am going to say more. They were counting. they were describing how much it would hold in the various compartments and, you know, glove boxes and things by how big devices were. So it could hold four iPads or three iPad minis. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, the center console where the shifter would normally be is massive. It's designed to store iPads, and it is pretty impressive, you know, without a mechanical linkage there, what you can do with that space. So I think from a versatility standpoint, they've done some homework.
So without mechanical linkage, some.
Yeah, so with there's no longer a shift lever. It's the rotary knob for the transmission and for the terrain response still. So it's just a more compact. There's no physical lever assembly under there like the older models had. So that space in the center console is tall and open beneath the facade of switches there.
Actually, the shift lever never took up that much space. The transfer case shifter took up some space, and the handbrake took up some
space.
But, yeah, all that stuff's gone now.
Yep.
What about modding it after? I noticed one of the articles I read, and I can't remember which one it was now, talked about, it seems like they were, JLR doesn't want, but questioned these third-party folks adding things onto their vehicles because it didn't look right or it didn't hold up or it wasn't good quality, and that's why they created the SVO line.
That's a Jerry thing. He actually brought that up when we were there and having dinner. That I think a lot of designers feel offended at, you know, what they create,
and then someone tacks
up something that they welded at home and you know, in the interest of pushing trees out of the way or whatever the specific purpose is. And so I think they would like if people didn't do that. Now, the reality of the aftermarket is that's not going to happen. But yeah, that I think that's where that comment probably derived from. He seemed personally offended that anyone would change anything on the vehicle after they've spent so much time perfecting it. So
he really doesn't get the Land Rover, does he?
certain users, no, I have my doubts.
Well, that brings us to a Top Gear interview, Jerry. Why don't we talk about Jerry McGovern? So they talked to him, and they had an interview. Well, of course, I have a link in the show notes, but some things to pull out of this. And I think, Morgan, this is where you made the little quick comments for me. Here we go.
I did.
You did. Thank you. We have a simple strategy. Land Rover is the master brand. Then three specific families, Range Rover, Discovery, Defender, which we talked about. The Defender hasn't come yet, so most of the focus has been on Range Rover, and we're starting to see the Discoveries. We've deliberately brought Discovery and Range Rover a bit closer together to make room for the Defenders when they come. If it's a Discovery, you design in the versatility. If it's a Range Rover, how you design in the luxury, and when Defenders come, how you make it incredibly durable in its design.
Yeah, I was impressed that's sort of one of the first very succinct, clear explanations of their sort of branding focus there and why we're starting to see so many similarities between the Discovery and the Range Rover in terms of look and feel.
Which gives me hope that maybe the Defender won't look like all the other ones with that comment, although, you know, we'll see.
It certainly implies that whether or not that'll be the case, I don't know.
Right. I mean, at least to them, it'll look significantly different, which, you know, they say there's a significant difference between the Discoveries and the Range Rovers, which are, you know, at this point, harder for the rest of us to detect, even when we're Land Rover fans.
And they also say that the new Disco has a stepped roof line.
Right.
See, look, so, we have a video to show you. Look, really, we do.
Yeah, so hopefully there really is a fairly large distinction there. If they think it's large, but they already think that there's something fairly large between those models anyway. So we'll see.
And here's the comment that Brian was referring to. So one of the reasons – this is Jerry talking. One of the reasons we've set up SVO is we've seen tuners taking 99% of our intellectual and creative property and changing a few things, generally not very well, eroding the guarantee and then charging a premium for it. We are going to design what people want, not if somebody wants to come along and have something bespoke, we can do that. We can do limited editions. What SVO is about is taking a particular car to a particular price point. There's no limit. There's design. There's a design, the power output, and all sorts of things we offer through SVO. Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes it sound less like it's so much aftermarket add-ons than the, you know, bespoke designers.
They want the
designers.
Money. They want the money.
I think it's great that they will offer that service. I think there's certainly a market, you know, for people to have a house modified or, you know, a custom built in-house model like that. But, you know, there's always going to be somebody else who has a different interpretation and is willing to push boundaries that you know, the factory probably won't. And so I think it's good to have options. But I don't think they're gonna put Con or any of the other, you know, visual tuners out of business, you know, by offering, custom models to suit. But.
Agreed. No, it's a good point.
I still remember the day when Land Rover Special Vehicles did useful stuff back in the 60s and 70s when they would, you know, it's not just about customizing your vehicle to suit the tastes of the owner who wants something special. It's about modifying the vehicle to do a special purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that special vehicle division. And that was something.
Why don't we move on to the bigger design story, one we're waiting for, the new Defender, apparently is already testing on roads ahead of a 2018 launch. Jag Land Rover boss Ralph Speth confirms a Defender Mule is in development and says it looks fantastic. And this is an Auto Car UK story. So apparently it's already undergoing testing, and he has driven prototypes. He says it looks fantastic, quote unquote. Design and engineering, now at stage of development, testing on the road. It's expected to arrive in 2018. It will be based on the aluminum architecture of the new Discovery Range Rover and Range Rover Sport and could be made in the same plant. Speth confirmed it won't be related to the Disco Sport or Evoque models. He added that it will be fairly different, quote-unquote, around fairly different, from other models and actual body componentry, because a vehicle of this capability has to be very tough indeed. And this is a quote he has here. There is no question of the new Defender just being an icon. We are working on an authentic successor to the old Defender. The architecture will contain a lot of elements that are different from other aluminum cars. He also added that all our vehicles have to make money.
Really?
Really, yeah. I mean, we know that, but yeah. And
yeah, because if they wanted to lose money, they could just keep making the old one.
Right. So, Brian, any inside knowledge about the new Defender?
I have no inside knowledge of the Defender. I will say that when we were there in July, Jerry seemed very eager to want to pull out the phone and show us some of the progress, but it was never going to happen. The PR handlers, you know, clearly said that was not going to be the case. But he indicated that the design was pretty far along, and that people, he said a couple times, forget DC 100. You know, that was an exercise, and I think we know what that meant. It didn't go over well.
I think that was just meant to piss us off so bad that we'd be relieved to see anything else.
Yeah. But he insists that people will recognize it as a Defender and will be happy with it. And all along they've repeated that it needs to be configurable into different body styles and different uses. So two doors, four doors, soft tops, hard tops. You know, whether we see another pickup again has never really been confirmed, obviously, at this stage. But definitely it's not going to be a single model with a single body style. It's going to have variants, without a doubt. So,
did they say anything about multiple wheelbases?
Well, I would imagine a short and a long would make sense, you know, for two doors and four doors. But no, they haven't confirmed whether there'll be one or two wheelbases or more.
It would make sense, but that doesn't mean they're going
to be too early. Yeah. Interestingly enough, when the DC 100 came out, I had mocked up a longer wheelbase. It just added scaled another 10 inches of wheelbase or 20 inches of wheelbase in there. And had mocked up a four door version of that, because those were all two door concepts. And I had a chance to show him that at an interview, I think in Frankfurt, in 2011 or so. And he looked at it and shook his head and said, interesting, not the way we're going to do it, but interesting. So it, he seemed to indicate even back then that, that multiple wheelbases were part of the game. But obviously no confirmation this early in the game. They're going to hold that tight until the end.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of finger crossing around here.
So I guess the question that comes up is, you know, we've had these, we have these families and, you know, Defender, Range Rover, and then we're going to Defender family. When you're talking about the multiple configurations, is that going to be the range of the Defender family, or is there going to be a Defender and then a Defender Sport, you know, since that seems to be the way they're going? Any sense of that?
I've heard rumors of Defender Sport, but never from anyone in the company. It's an interesting take, but I don't think so. I think they'll probably stick with this platform and have variants within that.
So you might have like a 110 and a 90, and you have a Defender.
Yeah. Okay. The fact that they've indicated it won't share a platform with Discovery Sport or Evoque is kind of a probably an indicator that there won't be a compact version of Defender. There'll probably just be a couple size variants based on wheelbase.
Unless they just choose to call the 90 the Sport just for marketing reasons.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah,
very
but it won't be on that front drive architecture.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we await 2017. Hopefully they'll reveal the new Defender, and we will certainly keep tabs on this. And I'm glad that Brian's on the show today to give us some further insight. So, Brian, I hope you'll come back. I know you've been on the show for 10 minutes, and I hope you'll come back and give us more info. So moving ahead in news, just maybe a brief one here, just because I find autonomous cars interesting. And I did see my first autonomous Uber in Pittsburgh, because, you know, we're here in Pittsburgh. I was actually driving the 109 at the time, and I tried to get a picture, but the 109 rattles so much, it was blurry. But I did see my first autonomous Uber driving through the streets of Pittsburgh. So, but Land Rover is working on it also, and they had a demonstration of a Range Rover doing the overtaking, passing in America, passing another vehicle at 50 miles an hour in a demonstration track. So, I just bring it up to say everybody's working on it. It's happening. It's coming, and they've got all their every car company, even if they say they aren't, they have to be working on these kinds of technologies.
Yeah, and in this particular case, I believe that there's a whole UK auto drive initiative sort of research project with a bunch of companies. So JLR is doing that with Ford and Tata Motors and some other companies. So this was actually not an on-road test. It was on a test track in the Midlands, I believe.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to, I believe, has to do with the vehicle-to-vehicle communication so that they can communicate with each other, which U.S. is also kind of working on, too. But that sounds like the U.K. has its own version.
The official reason for that trip back in July was actually to drive some of their autonomous vehicle technology in both Jaguar and Land Rover vehicles. And they're definitely working. They're hard at work on it. They've got some good stuff. We were able to play with some prototypes. They were doing a lot of the car-to-car stuff on the high-speed track, and it's a little bizarre to be following a lead vehicle at a distance of about 12 or 15 feet maybe off the bumper at 80 or so miles an hour, and to have the cars brake simultaneously because they're sharing information with each other.
Right.
It was pretty neat to see. They're definitely hard at work on that.
Any sense of communicating with vehicles that are not autonomous, you know, like putting maybe having the sense to put having the need to put sensors on and communications on older vehicles?
Yeah, that was a topic of discussion that several people brought up, was how do you deal, you know, 50 years from now, maybe all the cars on the road or the majority of them are, you know, speaking to each other, but how do you work with the, you know, the legacy vehicles? And that's quite frankly one of their big challenges right now is you know, how do you deal with that? And because current technology is going to be on the road for quite a while, and it will be a factor. They don't really have a solid answer. That's what they're still working on. So they're playing with non-communicated vehicles as well, and there's obviously a lot of ethical discussions. You know, I mean, I was thinking about this today. We just came back from from being out in Chicago, and we're driving home today, and watched somebody hit a deer on the highway, and you think, well, you know, how does an autonomous vehicle deal with something like roadkill? You know, I mean, ethically, now you've got a situation where traffic backing up behind you and all these other things that it, you know, will have to figure out. Or even a flat tire for that matter. Does it continue to drive? Does it pull off to the side of the road and stop? I mean, at what point does it determine it needs to stop? You know, there's a lot of questions. So,
yeah, you raise an interesting point. You know, when you talk about the autonomous vehicle, how does it deal with roadkill? How does it deal with seeing a deer in the road? The other question is, how does it learn the difference between a deer and a human standing in the road?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're working. A lot of algorithm, a lot of programming.
A lot of program. And I remind everyone that that's all programmed by humans. So
yes.
You know, that's they've not gotten to the AI part yet, which is further along, I think, which is not as further along as people think it is. But
yeah, you'll have. And that's where the ethics come in, because, you know, if you're driving in traffic and realize you've got heavy traffic right on your rear bumper, you know, you have to make a decision. Do you hit that animal or do you stomp the brakes and maybe cause a pileup behind you? And that's the kind of stuff.
You hit the animal,
or do you go for the ditch and potentially kill yourself so that you don't kill a child?
Yeah.
You know, those are the decisions you make, and unfortunately, computers can't make those decisions. They're going to do what they're programmed to do, what they're told to do. So, essentially, at this point, that ethical decision is being made by a programmer in a cubicle.
Yeah. Right. That's exactly our point.
Yeah. Exactly.
The good news is, right now, a lot of the manufacturers are sharing this, you know, research, and you know, it's not going to be proprietary. It'll be shared across. You know, a consortium of manufacturers. So when decisions, good decisions are made, they'll be integrated pretty much universally. So I think what we'll end up, you know, is a fairly standard protocol across the industry once a lot of these things have been figured out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, end of the day, the computer is going to drive better than a human is. It's just that.
Oh, without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's the way it is.
Well, it can make the decisions quicker, whether they're the right decision or not.
But it goes back to the programming. That's all.
Well, and that's the other interesting thing, is because programming is just software, you know, if we start to see major issues with how we thought these things should work, we can just change how they work, and it can be pushed out to the vehicles relatively easily. I mean, in fact, with this whole overtake feature that they're testing, most of the hardware is actually already in the existing Range Rover Sports that they're testing on. It's got all the blind spot detection stuff, the power assist steering, the adaptive cruise control. That's all the stuff they're building on.
I can't wait to see what the hacking target turns into once.
a little more broad.
They're already being hacked now, but the more people that jump on, the bigger the target, the more fun some kid's going to have.
Or
nation state, or, you know, whatever.
Chaos.
Yeah, it's,
Yeah, an unintended software upgrade that causes it to careen into a crowd.
I think that'll be part of the standard. There'll be methodologies around it.
And security is going to have to be seriously looked at.
Security has, ever since the beginning of time in computing, they've always included security at the very beginning. Didn't you know that? That's a sarcastic statement for all my information security professionals out there.
I'm just going to walk away on that one.
You are walking away. Why are you walking away? Oh, he's got to take a break. Well, while Mark walks away to take a break, we're gonna move on and talk about older vehicles. Why don't we get away from the autonomous and the brandy new. So Land Rover has opened Sully Hall Reborn Tour, and we talked about it before, but now we have a little more details, and it's officially open. This is an extension of that celebration exhibit that they had, and you know, they will offer visitors an insight into the 1940s production and the many fascinating stories of the 1948 Series 1 to present day Defender. The tours start at £29 for a 90-minute Reborn Tour, or £150 for a combined tour 4 and a drive lasting 3 hours, so that you can choose between us. And now, thanks to the current exchange rate, it's actually cheaper for Americans now to do that than it used to be. We just checked today; it's £1 to $1.22 as of today. So it's virtually about $35 then, if you want, of course, airfare. But
yeah, plus getting there.
Yeah, plus getting there. There's always the getting there part.
I don't think that's gotten that much cheaper.
I don't think so.
You'd be surprised. It's not too bad.
No, it's not bad. I'm just thinking it's not precipitously cheaper like a lot of things are over there because of the exchange rate.
Yeah.
True.
If you can't make it, check out the Autoblog story. They have some pictures there. At least everything looks very clean, of course. But they have a couple pictures at least give you a sense of what the exhibit is all about.
You know, as we discussed previously, this one actually lets you observe some of the Land Rovers undergoing restoration in the classic workshop. So that's part of it, as well as the sort of celebration tour that they had before, which has been moved over near the classic workshop.
I've had my head in other things lately. I actually missed that news story and caught that one. So
yay! But,
yeah, you scooped me.
Yeah, I scooped you. Well, we'll cut this part out. Don't worry.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing for a professional to get scooped by us amateurs.
Yeah.
Next up, I found this one interesting, and mainly because of the tech involved, but the story is that the Queen Elizabeth was visiting the Royal Engineers on the occasion of their 300th anniversary. She arrived in a Bentley, but she did tour in the official touring car, which is now a Range Rover, and they've cut out the back for standing purposes. And I thought it was really interesting that they also have a special stool that kind of goes out on the side she can step onto.
Did she jump into the driver's seat and take off?
They didn't have any pictures of that, not on this one.
Because that sounds like the
she could do it.
Now.
Oh, she could do it. She could definitely do it. But this one is really fascinating because this is a hybrid Range Rover, and it's a diesel hybrid, and which allows
as it should be.
And they say which allows it to run on times purely on electric power, minimal fumes, especially when the subjects are nearby. And
yeah, it better be minimal fumes when it's full electric.
So this is the fourth. Oh, that's what they're called. Yeah, this is the fourth state review vehicle manufactured for the royal family by JLR. And the first was a Series 1 and 53, and I think this. And before that, there was a 2002. And these are available at the Motor Museum, whose name has changed.
The
and I
British
forget.
Motor Museum.
Oh, that one, the British Motor Museum. You can see them there, which I saw a couple years ago when I was there. So, anyways,
So the state review vehicle is their word for the Queen's Pope Mobile.
Yes. Staying on Range Rovers, the first production Range Rover is for sale. So back in 46 years ago, I'm trying to find the date, 1970-something, this was the very first Range Rover that was registered, given a number plate.
That would be 1970.
And yep, May 27th.
Thank you. I was trying to find it. May 27th. And it's expected to – it's going to be for sale, auctioned off, I believe, and they're thinking it's going to go between 80 and 100,000 pounds.
And I believe the auction was this weekend, but I couldn't find results of that auction yet, so we don't know how much it has gone for. It was pretty meticulously refurbished, so it looks impressive.
It's just amazing to look at something like that and realize how far Range Rover has come.
Absolutely.
The first Range Rover being a so-called luxury vehicle is really pretty crude compared to what they are now. I mean, the two doors, the metal grill, the outside fuel filler with no door on it, all kinds of just primitive things.
The rear view, the mirrors out on the end of the wing, you know.
but compared to the series vehicles, this is quite the step up.
This is luxury.
The mirrors were probably useful.
Yeah, this was one of the first batch or the first of the batch of 20 press launch cars that were built. And so it was the first one registered, but also I think it went out for a whole bunch of that press launch and then came back to the factory. And I think they kept it until like 73 or so. And they sold it off to a company that converted Range Rovers into ambulances, but fortunately they did not chop it up and turn it into an ambulance. So it went into private ownership around 76, And then this company purchased it in 2000 to do the full restoration. So it's lucky that it could have been gone forever.
And hopefully it will continue. Someone will buy it and keep it going. Or maybe Land Rover will buy it and put it in a museum.
It needs a good steward, that's for sure.
And our final news story is one from our friend Ben Gibbon over at funrover.com. And he had did some research and has a post entitled, "Defender Body Panels Are Not Bermabrite. The panels on your Defender are not Bermabrites." So it's a common myth often spouted by owners and the press alike. Everyone knows that Defender makes use of the unique alloy Bermabrite in its panel construction. And he says it's a bit more complicated than that. It's not the fact. And it kind of boils down to Burma Metals Company went out of business due to poor sales between 1977 and 79, and Land Rover would have used up its remaining stock, and in 1980 switched over to another alloy similar to it, but not the same. And so from late Series 3 models onwards, they are not Bermabrite.
And Bermabrite's really a trade name, but it also refers to a specific type of alloy. So even in your older ones that would have been built with Bermabrite, any replacement panel you have is likely not Bermabrite.
Yeah.
Though you'd never tell by looking.
Very true. And that he actually even goes into some of the details of which Bermabrite, you know,
metals
concoctions were used. Well, they have specific alloys that were rated basically by the amount of magnesium in them. So like the Series 1 and 2 used slightly thicker panels that were BB2, so 2 magnesium. And for the 2As, they switched over to slightly thinner BB3. But then the whatever the new alloy they switched to is even thinner and not as corrosion resistant as the Bermabrite actually was.
Check out the article on, we'll have a link to the show notes, but thanks to Ben for doing some research on that. And that's all there is for the news in the Land Rover world for October 2016. Welcome back to the Center Steer Podcast for October 2016. This is show number 43. We're now going to talk to our guest, who is the publisher of the new Land Rover paper magazine, hard copy form, called Alloy and Grit, Brian Joslin. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
So, magazine, great idea. No, seriously, we'll get to that question. But you sent me an advanced paper, non-paper electronic copy, a PDF, and we were able to skim it here before the show. It looks fantastic. I think the pictures I've seen, even in your Instagram, it looks really nice. They're well done photos. The stories look interesting. I do have one problem though, and
sure.
this is very
here we go.
Difficult subject matter. Your column is called Center Steer, and it's spelled
yes.
wrong.
It is. It's spelled wrong on purpose. It's
to mess with us.
So we're thinking along the same lines here. My opening column for each issue is called Center Steer, and you know it's kind of the play on words to kind of get things centered for the issue that follows. I deviated from the proper spelling, if you will, in part because it reinforces the message that that what we're producing is really an American-centric publication. We want the content to be primarily American focused, and certainly we're writing primarily for an American focused audience. So throughout the book we'll use American convention for spelling. So there's no U in the word color, for instance. It's ER instead of RE. So it was very intentional. It also avoids any confusion with what you're doing and what we're doing, right?
Well, we support your Americanization of the language.
Thank you.
Especially since it's an American-based content. Now,
are you also going to use American terminology for the parts?
Yeah. The hood is going to refer to the part that goes over the engine.
Excellent.
And wings are what are what all the new Range Rovers have adjacent to their headlights, apparently. So, or winglets, really. But yeah, no, we're using American terminology. We want it to be approachable to really to an audience that may not even be you know, immersed in Land Rover and Range Rover culture and terminology at this point. So we want it to be approachable to the American audience without them having to need a translation guide first. So
how did the idea come about? What was the genesis of the idea?
So this is actually kind of an old idea for me. For years I worked at an online publisher. We did VWVortex.com was who I worked for, and we did have brand vertical sites, they call them. So we had a BMW site that I ran, an Audi site, a Volvo site, and it was essentially a blog with well-trafficked discussion forums behind them. So we ran news stories on the front side, and had healthy discussion activity on the backside. That was our business model. And we were always looking at other brands to go after. And this was back in probably 2005 when I first kind of mentioned, hey, you know, nobody's really doing a decent Land Rover one at the time. And we toyed around with the idea, but really couldn't make a business case out of it, quite frankly. We just had too many other irons in the fire at the time. And so we passed on it. But I kind of started to create, you know, folders and develop the company. So I was with that company for 9 years and left because digital media was become a different kind of landscape than when we came into it. It was really all about page views, and it was very tough to differentiate an editorial product on the internet, where everything moves really fast and you click from one thing to another, and you know a lot of times you look at content, you don't even recognize whose content it is. You never really absorb that. So so I started looking as a way to kind of do a Land Rover publication and do it right with the, you know, kind of resources that it takes to do that. And quite frankly, a business model behind it, you know, to connect the aftermarket and all the kind of lifestyle stuff that comes along with being a Land Rover owner, to have an advertising base for that. And, you know, quite frankly, there's just not money in doing an online publication. You know, you just have to turn millions and millions of page views to make any dollars on it. And the reality is Land Rover is not that kind of, manufacturer. It's just not a high turn. There's not a ton of new models. There's not a ton of news. So there really wasn't a way to generate tons and tons of content and monetize it. But print, I'd watched that for the last few years and saw that it was kind of certain products were becoming, more approachable, as kind of premium print, outlets. As long as you were really concentrated on a single niche, and not trying to be, Motor Trend, Car and Driver. Those big books do really well in the online space, but they have so many facets to their business to support that. And I'm looking at doing it as a single publisher. So premium print was the vehicle that made sense for the brand, and on a quarterly basis, you know, just with the reality of the content turn and how we were going to approach it. I had always been a Land Rover enthusiast, and quite frankly, I'd always wanted a Range Rover Classic, and fell into a Discovery 2 by mistake, by accident. A coworker of mine had a friend who had basically blown the engine, ignored a coolant leak, and it was during Cash for Clunkers. No one wanted the thing, and I paid $600 for it and put an engine in it. It wasn't the Land Rover I thought I was going to start with, but
that's the right price.
It was the right price. And I had about, you know, I don't know, say $2,600, $2,800 into it altogether when it was done. And so it got me into it. But even as a professional automotive writer for all those years, Land Rover was one of the few brands I really always made a point to stay up on what they were doing, and made every effort to be at their booth and to be in their cars whenever I could. It was It was a brand I really related to. And so combine that with the fact that nobody was really doing a good magazine at the time. And, you know, I'd been I'd picked up Land Rover Lifestyle. And of course, you know, Rovers North does, Rovers magazine, but you know, there just wasn't anything that satisfied, kind of my interest in the whole market, especially from a North American perspective. I got LRM and LRO, you know, whenever I could pick them up at the newsstand. But, I always felt, you know, greenlighting, for instance, never related to anything I could do. And, you know, you can only read so many articles on 5-speed diesel, you know, Defenders. Before it just doesn't connect with what you can actually do. So, about 3 years ago, to shorten up the story a little bit, about 3 years ago, I started getting serious about looking at developing a print magazine for North American Land Rover enthusiasts, and started doing my research. At the time, we lived in Chicago, and about 6 months after I started working on this, we ended up moving out here to Pennsylvania. And as I was talking to people at Land Rover and locally, they were saying, oh, you need to know this guy, Steve Hoare, if you don't know him already. And Steve actually found me on a post I made on Disco Web, I believe, or Defender Source, and reached out. He said, it looks like we're really close to each other. We should probably talk. And that was December... December 2 years ago. And so we got together, and you know, Steve's been a contributor to LRM and LRO for many years, and likewise had been campaigning to get them to do a North American version. And was a little frustrated. So we shared ideas. I showed him what my concept was, and he talked about, you know, how he had wanted to do it. And it became apparent that we really needed to be working together on it. So that was really in January of 2014 when we had our first real meeting, and just started developing it from there. And so that's kind of the kernel of, you know, the start of the concept. And so for the last 2 years, almost we've been building out the concept, you know, the content mix, how we're going to approach, you know, certain topics, the need to include as much of North America as possible. And when I say North America, I'm talking, you know, primarily the United States and Canada, but, you know, including Canada as part of this market as well. And then really the final product being something that people would want to have and hold on to and actually pay for, you know, and see the value in what we're producing. So that's what we've been working on. And, it's finally coming to life. This first issue is, really 3 years in the making, and, we're pretty proud of where we brought it to this point, and pretty soon we'll be able to share that with everybody, and hope everyone else is satisfied with it as well.
You're a wonderful guest, because I had to ask one question, and you answered, you know, like 90% of the questions.
Oh, so we're all done.
We're done. Good night. So it's how much does it cost, and what's the frequency? And I've already signed up, for the record. I'm a subscriber, was an early subscriber. Where do people go to subscribe?
Yeah, so we designed it as a premium magazine. So it's a $10 cover price, which, you know, when we were benchmarking magazines like Overland Journal and you know, quite frankly, if you're going to pick up LRO or LRM, you're going to pay $10 or $11 for a copy of that as well. So we kind of built everything around a $10 cover price, because that gives us enough, you know, working capital, quite frankly, to do what we need to do. It gives us some actual revenue. We can't do a $4.99 magazine. No one does a $4.99 car magazine anyway, these days, but, $10 seemed like the right price. $15 seemed a little beyond what we wanted to offer. We wanted to make it accessible, you know, for the cost of a Chipotle launch. You can pick up, the magazine, and we're doing it quarterly at this point. The, you know, quite frankly, putting together this first issue required a full quarter worth of diligent effort to gather everything and get it rounded up. But also, you know, coming back to the frequency of news and things like that, it's a small model line. You know, so from a new car perspective, there's not a lot to cover. It's not like there's there's, you know, 2-3 new models with every issue. And then also, you know, for us just to be able to get out and experience, you know, the events and to get out and do the things and meet the people we want to see. We couldn't do that right now anyway on a more frequent schedule than quarterly. So so that's the frequency for the time being. We're doing 4 issues a year. And then, you know, right now the challenge with any magazine, obviously, is getting that out into people's hands. So we do have a store online at our website, alloyandgrit.com. More importantly, we've made an arrangement with Atlantic British to get, copies of the first 4 issues, to them, and they'll be distributing them here, with paid orders. They're doing up to 20,000, copies of each, issue. So that'll give us a little bit of a kind of a launch pad to get them out into the hands of people that, currently own Land Rovers or Range Rovers and are still spending money on them. So, we thought that was a pretty good demographic to hit. And, we've entered just a marketing arrangement with them. So they're going to distribute the magazines for us, and we've given them some advertising and working with them on, you know, just on promoting the new product here, our magazine. So, but, you know, unlike the Rovers arrangement, you know, it's completely independent. They don't have an ownership in what we're doing, so we're free to produce the content we want to produce and need to produce, without any, interference from them. And they get the benefit of being associated with this new magazine for a while. So, that was a win for us. That was a really big win for us to be able to work that out with them. And, naturally we wouldn't have approached Rovers North. I mean, we respect what, Jeff and everyone at Rovers North does with that magazine. I think it's a great service that they do. It's always fun to get the catalog and see, you know, those articles as well. But we felt, you know, obviously that's a limiting, there are limitations of what they're going to cover out of their business interests. And, so we needed to stay completely independent. And, you know, that was the deal with Atlantic British, you know, that we were going to run stories and even ads from potential competitors, and they were okay with that. So it's, so far it's been a great relationship with
them. Is there a chance then? There's no chance then I can get a mug then. There's no coveted mugs. Right?
we don't have any mugs at the moment to give away for spotting, Land Rovers. We'll let Jeff own that, corner of the market.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Because you need more mugs, John.
Let the bells stay with you for a week, and you do not have enough mugs in the house. I'll tell you that. That's a guaranteed.
So many complaints.
Will there be an e-version? Many of the magazines, I know LRM, LRO, they typically have an e-version, especially for people outside the country. Is that a plan, or is that something?
Yeah, so we're working on that. It'll probably be, we haven't announced the details because we're still working those out, but there will probably be a free version of that available with your paid order, your paid, you know, copy. And then we'll probably have an abbreviated version of it online for free. We're still working out the platform we're going to use. So, you know, the reality is, it was designed as a print product, so it's going to present best in that format. It wasn't designed as a digital first product, and our, quite frankly, in the short term, our digital option will probably be mostly a replica of what we've produced in print. We just don't have the resources to do a special iPad version with a lot of interactivity and stuff.
So will the subscription cost be cheaper than the $10 a month? I assume subscriptions.
Yeah. So we're offering right now, and probably will continue to offer, you know, basically 4 issues for the cost of 3 at a 25% discount when you do a full year subscription. Right now we're only offering single copy and 1 year subscriptions, but eventually we'll branch out and offer a 2 year with a more similar discount. Or more substantial discount. And we're hoping to be working with some marketing partners to offer some incentives for, some gifts for subscriptions as well. So that's all stuff that's coming down the road when we have time to have those discussions. So I can say, though, that one of the things we wanted to do with print magazine was not make it just entirely flat paper. And so we have built some augmented reality content into the magazine. So several of the features in there have a little white plus icon marked on images. And with the Erasma app, it's a free download. You can you download the app and then you subscribe to the Alloy and Grit channel, and it uses image recognition instead of QR codes, so you can hover over the image and open additional content, videos or photo galleries or other digital assets. So there is an interactive element even within print, but we didn't want to do it with QR codes, messing up the design of the magazine. We wanted to produce something first and foremost that was attractive to look at and to hold,
As an information security professional, I thank you for not using QR codes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just not fond of the look, and there's better technology out there now to connect that. Really, all that QR code is just a target, to connect to the content that's attached to it. So yeah, I've played around with the Erasma app on a couple other endeavors and been happy with that. So yeah, the idea is, you can hover with your smartphone or your iPad or whatever, and wherever you see the little plus icon on top of an image, it'll unlock some additional content once you're into the app.
You mentioned going to the website to order the magazine and your distribution agreement with Atlantic British.
Mm-hmm.
Are you also going to have it available at say like newsstands or whatever the modern equivalent of that would be?
We've talked to several people that publish similarly small magazines, and they've said that, in the end, like a Barnes & Noble arrangement is not cost effective for them. It gets more magazines out there, but they end up losing money on every one of them that they sell. So there's a side of the magazine business, the distribution side, that doesn't jive well with me. And that's it. When a bookseller orders your magazine, they order a quantity of, let's say, 10. If they sell three of them, the other seven that go unsold, they take the cover off and send back for credit. The other 98 pages of the magazine go in recycling, and then you give them full credit for the unsold copies, which is why it's an expensive proposition to go into the newsstand business. I have a hard time just tossing away 98 pages, 100 pages of good content. We're working on a small bookshop kind of program, trying to support, some of the independent bookshops. It'll be a little more time consuming for us to build that network. But the idea is that any of the unsold ones, they either hold on to for back issue sales themselves, or we'll do an annual kind of buyback, but we'll take back the entire magazine and then it'll go back in our inventory as a back issue, which once we have several under our belt, we'll be able to offer as another option.
Right.
It's a tough, the newsstand part of the business is really tough right now, the distribution side. However, we've talked with several of our advertisers and they're interested in carrying it in their online catalogs as well. So Knightsbridge Overland, which does some of the tactical seat covers, they're going to be adding it to their store. A couple others, Atlantic British has talked about adding it to their store at least after the co-marketing arrangement is over. And we expect other Land Rover affiliated, retailers to maybe pick that up as another item that you could pick up, through them. We'll also be out at events and have the, magazines available for sale as we get out to events. And, like I said, we're hoping to add some independent booksellers to our list. We'll be adding a where to buy tab here once we get a few of those lined up. Actually, probably in the next week or so, we'll have some of those locked down. So there will be other outlets, or you can order it directly from us, obviously, as well.
Right. Yeah. The great thing about the newsstand or the bookstore experience is it allows you to expose yourself to people who haven't seen your product yet, and they can look at it, they can feel it, and if they like it, you might get a new subscriber out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a tough decision to make because, you have to print so many additional copies that you have to pay for regardless of whether anyone buys them or not. So
right.
you know, as a small independent publisher, it's a dilemma. Because we would like, obviously, to get it in as many hands as possible. But, you know, the other thing is just finding space on those newsstands. If you've been to a Barnes & Noble lately, you know, good titles get buried behind a lot of stuff. So
right. It's a crowded world. That's kind of what I liked about going there.
It is.
A chance to see some stuff I haven't seen or to sort of poke around. I've thought about this before, but haven't had a chance to see one, and here I can hold it.
I used to work at a bookstore 1,000 years ago, and I do remember stripping off the covers off of many a magazine, and they all get chucked.
Yeah,
that was. I know that world. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I've been there too. I sold magazines in a shop that I had, and you know, there were a couple that actually had a no return arrangement, and that's, you know, that was, they were high end magazines, and you bought them, you own them. If you sell them today or sell them in 6 months, that's up to you. But it's just not common in the industry. Typically, you know, the booksellers don't want to keep them around if they aren't sold, and they want to get money back for them if they bought too many. So
we're looking at one article that you sent me, and I just like the general layout. Obviously, I didn't get a chance to read it all, but this is the field skills getting to the other side. And the design is clearly you spend a lot of time and attention on design, because it, you know, you have the article bleeds into awaiting depth, and it's nicely done. I want to say that something particularly came up that I saw that caught my attention was that design. So you guys have done a nice job on the design. Clearly, there's attention throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I have to give credit to, you know, we have two designers working with us. So Steve and I are working on the, you know, the word side and the business side of running a magazine. But we have two designers, Dan Marcello, who a lot of Northeast guys probably know. He's got a Defender 90 and a Series 1. And shows up at a lot of the, you know, the Winter Romp and Vermont Overland and a lot of, you know, series events as well. So, you know, Dan's an advertising designer by trade, and, you know, he's someone Steve has known for years. And really, he deserves credit for especially that layout. He pushed for that design. There were a couple other designs that were in consideration, and he made a case for that, and I was really happy with the final result of that. And then recently, a couple months ago, we added one more designer who really has more publication design experience than Dan does. Dan's got more of a branding and kind of a graphical design background. But Chris Haluski is he's based here just across the river from us over in New Jersey. And so he helped us with a lot of the, you know, just getting the publication to flow as a cohesive volume of work. And so those two guys really are responsible for the look and the feel. I mean, I had a concept and I threw them stuff and they said, yeah, this is a good place to start, but that's not how we're going to do it. And they really polished everything that we had. It's a good looking magazine. I mean, I can tell you the specifications on like the paper and everything. I think I mentioned it's 100 pages. That's the total page count, including the covers. The interior is a 70-pound paper. It's a heavyweight paper, and then the cover is 100-pound cardstock. It's a cover stock, so it's along the lines, if you're familiar with Overland Journal, you know, the paperweight and everything is very similar to that. We're doing a soft touch cover. That was one of the things that two designers really, really wanted. So we're doing that. It'll have a nice feel in hand. And we decided on matte paper instead of gloss paper for the finish. It presents a little differently. We're hoping the color holds up really well, but we've got assurances from the printer. It's going to be a nice product when it's done. It has less glare, so when you're reading it and, you know, in under the lamp or whatever, you don't get as much sheen across the page as you do with the gloss paper. And it's still a really high quality, you know, coated paper. So I think the overall production quality of the magazine is going to impress a lot of people as well. On a content side, you know, we essentially had a content map where we had to make sure we hit interests with series vehicles, with the new vehicles, with off-road, with events, adventure, and personality. So we had all these things, and we also had to make sure that we were kind of connecting all corners of the world. So, you know, one of the features is a company in Canada. One of the adventure articles is out of the Northwest. You know, certainly there's a lot of East Coast coverage as well. So we had to hit geographic points and interest points throughout the magazine so that it didn't end up being too one-sided. So I think everyone who owns or has interest in a Land Rover should find something of interest in there. It's not exclusively a classic Land Rover magazine. It's not exclusively a lifestyle magazine at all. There's a little bit of everything.
Going back to your comment about the paper stock, yeah, I think I like the idea of the matte paper. It's going to set you apart a little bit because everybody else uses glossy. So I mean, it's different, it's unique in that regard. But also, I think it's going to have a really nice patina once it gets splashed with beer and 90 weight.
Yeah. I think the covers will be pretty much waterproof. You'll be able to use them as coasters with that soft touch coating. Don't hold me to that, but it's a nice coated finish on the covers anyway.
It'll look good on the coffee table, I can tell you that.
Yeah. And it's a large format. It's 9 inch wide by almost 11 inches tall. So it's beyond your standard magazine size. It's right up there with all the other kind of premium.
You talked about this being a North America
magazines.
A North America specific kind of publication. Aside from models not available here that are available all the rest of the world, you've mentioned a couple things that you're going to do. You know, bounce around the country, different places. The continent, different places. What other North America specific content do you see happening, or do you anticipate? Obviously, you know what stories are happening for the next couple months, but what kind of things can we expect that would be specific to North America?
Well, I think, you know, the events, certainly, you know, all the English shows are well attended and well known, but I think there's other magazines covering that. And, you know, if your interests lie in that area, you'll be able to pick up LRO or LRM and still know about that. But we really wanted to highlight what was happening here. So certainly from an event standpoint, we'll be, you know, working on that. And quite frankly, the adventure stuff as well, you know, getting out and actually using the vehicles the way they were intended. We want to, you know, reveal for people what's possible here. We got approached by a lot of people who wanted to do, you know, wanted to sell us an Iceland story or, you know, crossing, Simpson Desert in Australia, and you know, we're torn. Those are going to be fascinating stories, and they're probably going to be beautiful, you know, in pictures. But you know, we wanted to focus on adventures that you didn't have to ship your truck first. So, you know, very very North American specific in terms of you know, all the driving events as well. And driving opportunities, I should say. You know, beyond that, I mean, there will be non-U.S. specific vehicles in there. I mean, certainly with, you know, vehicles that are 25 years and older, there's going to be some things that have come into the country as personal imports that will be of interest. So it's not that we're not interested in what the rest of the world got. It's just, we need to make it connect with what people can find on the market here and you know, relate to.
All of us here support and endorse that. So I know you know that. That's hence one of the reasons you're on the show.
Yeah, I think, you know, the internet makes everything accessible, you know, from outside of this country. But like I said, you know, no one's really covering the depth of you know, activity and quite frankly, even the personalities that are involved with, you know, with the Land Rover scene here in North America. So, yeah, it's a unique market. I mean, I think that could certainly be argued that, you know, we are considerably different as a Land Rover owner's market than Europe or certainly England. You know, I mean, they're essentially luxury vehicles, even the series vehicles are seen as different here than they are. You know, they're work tractors in most of Europe, and here there's something special. You know, and
my friends still say I drive a Range Rover, and I'm gonna have to explain it every time. It's not a Range Rover,
certainly not your 109.
No. Oh, these people, they need educated. That's why we need this magazine to educate folks.
That's right. As long as they don't call it a Jeep, right?
Correct. So something. This is not a specific to Alloy and Grit question, but it just dawned on me. When I went to the Overland Expo, the thing that kind of stood out to me was that it seems that camping and overlanding is starting to come into its existence here, I think, in North America. Certainly we've camped for a long time in this country, but it seems like there's been a resurgence maybe of camping. And since you attended, I was curious what your thoughts were on that too. Because there's a lot of content coming in from South Africa, and I find out from Graham it's because they like to camp, and it seems like we don't like to camp as much as we used to, but maybe it's coming back.
Yeah. I think we have to credit Overland Journal for really making overlanding a thing, you know, here in this country. Quite frankly, I think they've done a great job in 10 years of publishing their magazine of making that, an attractive endeavor and covering that field well. Yeah, certainly we've camped for, out of cars for decades now, but I think the way in which it's viewed as an activity seems to be growing in popularity. You know, it's a bit of a lifestyle statement, I think, to say that you're going overlanding. I think what I got out of Overland East was how much of a family centric activity it was. I mean, there were tons of kids there, lots of families. You know, this is not just guys showing up with their trucks. This is a family, family trip, a different way of spending time together as a family.
Right.
So, we're all for that. And, I certainly saw a lot of stuff out of South Africa as well. It seems to be the, certainly a hotspot of new product development for the overlanding field.
Absolutely. Certainly does.
Well, the favorable currency exchange doesn't hurt either.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The number of rooftop tent manufacturers was overwhelming.
I swear that was 2/3 of the show.
It really was. That and adventure trailers are and at $25,000 a piece, it's amazing there's that many people making them. But I think it's great. And, I think, as we've talked about, our business plan, we've had to tell a lot of people, look, we're not doing an off-roading magazine. There's so much more to living with a Land Rover than just, crawling over rocks and going through mud. You have to live with them. And one of the great things about them is, the versatility. And I think overlanding is a great way of kind of combining, the off-road ability, but with a real purpose, getting somewhere and doing something that you couldn't do in a Jetta. No offense.
Hey, none taken. The Jetta, the Jetta has its purpose.
Yeah, it's good at a lot of things, but that's not it.
That's correct.
Exactly.
Depends on which Jetta, too. If you get the sport wagon one, to have plenty of room to carry stuff.
Yeah. And we all know you can take a stock Forester and actually do a lot of that stuff as well. I mean, you don't have to have a built off road vehicle to travel overland. But I think it certainly. The activity certainly makes Land Rovers much more attractive as a vehicle, in this market. I think it's a good combination of activity and vehicle.
When will the first edition be in my mailbox?
So we have dropped all our digital files at the printer, and they've approved them all. And in theory, they're maybe running on the press right now. Certainly this week they are printing and will be bound, and we are supposed to take delivery sometime 8th, 9th, 10th, somewhere in that time frame, depending on how the production schedule runs. So as soon as we have them in hand, we will be we'll be packaging up the pre-sales and getting those out, and they'll be available for regular delivery after that point as well. And Atlantic British will start dropping them officially on the 15th. That's the launch date. Okay. So we worked backwards from that date. The 15th happens to be the start of the LA Auto Show, at least from the industry perspective. There's some events happening on the evening of the 15th. It officially opens the press on the 16th. So it coincides well with that. And, of course, the Discovery 5 will be debuting there. So it all ties in really nicely. Obviously, we've got a lot of Discovery 5 content in the first issue there. We cover a couple different stories. So that all segues well for us. But, yeah, we basically built that back from a November 15th launch date. So
it'll be
hopefully right around the 15th, 16th or so, you should see it in your box, maybe even sooner, depending on when they leave the mailbox.
As long as it's before Thanksgiving, I'll be happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about you. What are you currently driving? And you said you own two Land Rovers.
I've had two Discovery Twos. And I should say the article in there mentions finally getting my Range Rover class. I've made a deal that I haven't paid for yet. A 95 Classic that I'm buying from a local contact here. So it's a really rough one with a quarter million miles on it, but nevertheless, I'm getting my 95 long wheelbase, which is what I'd always wanted. My current daily driver is a 2000 Discovery 2 with I think it just turned 130,000 miles. And as fresh head gaskets, you know, I did those earlier in the summer, and everything's good. So
that's the first question we'll ask.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And obviously my first one, I bought with a blown engine. I sourced a block from, I'm drawing a blank on his name, up in Connecticut, does the used parts.
Morgan.
Oh. Not Morgan. No.
No, Q Morgan.
I was queuing Morgan.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Anyway, picked up a used long block from, actually it wasn't from him. It was from a guy whose wife had wiped off the right side of the truck on a tree because they were running bald tires in the winter in Vermont. So I ended up swapping in the engine and doing a top end rebuild at the time. And so that was my first one. Unfortunately, it died on our move out here, pulling a U-Haul trailer in 20 degree weather. So I parted that one out and sold it off and picked up this 2000 a couple years ago, and it's been a pretty good car as Discovery 2s go.
Good.
And we're actually gonna be building that one up as a project vehicle. That's mentioned in the tail end of the magazine there. So right now it has an off road bumper because I could not source a good uncracked Discovery 2 factory bumper, so I just went with an off-road bumper. It's still empty. It needs to have at least a winch and some lights put in it, but we're going to start with that as the platform and do some light off-road trail readiness for that vehicle.
Good. So remind our listeners where they can find Alloy and Grit and get their own copy.
Yeah, so the website right now is probably the best place to guarantee you can get it. It's alloyandgrit.com, and there's a tab at the top for store, and that'll take you right into our online store, and use credit card or Apple Pay or PayPal. So,
are you shipping worldwide?
We are shipping worldwide. We don't have a separate international order, but when you check out at the address field, there's just additional shipping charges depending on the country we're shipping to. So it's just a few bucks more for Canada. It's $112 more for Europe, and then I think it jumps up to $15 for the rest of the world or so. It is available internationally, and quite frankly, we've taken a lot of orders from the UK, but Australia has shown a lot of interest in that, a few from Germany, and I think one from Hong Kong just in the last week. So it's gaining an international following, a small one at this point, but I think that's the beauty of Instagram. You
right.
Track people from everywhere.
Well, maybe the podcast will help you to gain additional.
I hope so.
Yeah. Same here. And hopefully, when we get some listeners from folks reading the magazine too.
Yeah.
I challenge Oren, our listener in Australia that I know of. Maybe he'll hopefully buy one. At least check it out.
Yeah, I know of one from Sweden, many from Australia, many from the UK, and several from Germany as well. So, yeah, I think North America is pretty fascinating, the rest of the world as well. And I think, you know, the scenery and the vehicles that we get here and what we do with them will be of interest outside of our area as well.
As is evidenced by my current house guests, I think they would completely agree with you. Yeah, they would. They have misconceptions. You know, they speak the language, and however, you know, misconceptions have dropped as a result of visiting. So, good stuff. Well, thanks very much, Brian, for coming on the show and talking about the magazine. Is there anything we didn't cover about the magazine you wanted to get out?
I think, you know, we had a lot of questions about the name. That seems to be the one. It seems to be 50-50 on the name. Actually, probably better than that. Most people seem to actually like the name. That came out of a tough conversation I had with Land Rover's legal team over some other titles that we had had conceived, and they basically said everything we were going to throw out there would be worthy of them coming after us. So we did not want to build a brand, around a name that we were going to have to license from them or live in fear of being sued. So, so we went back to the drawing board and to me, two elements that are present in every Land Rover, were literally the alloy, you know, the aluminum alloy being an element of every Land Rover from the beginning was kind of a neat starting point. And then the grit, which is kind of a play on words there, because certainly the trail grit, you know, that you pick up from going where no one else goes, but also the intestinal fortitude it takes to kind of be an owner sometimes.
To drive a serious truck.
Yeah.
more than an hour.
Nice, for us, it was a nice way to kind of,
that would be alloy and spleen.
and of course, you know, in this day and age, if you can't buy the URL, you really don't have a title. So,
true.
So it also came down to the realities of owning those intellectual properties that go along with it. So that's how it came about. We would have loved to put Land Rover right in the name. This copyright or
trademark
stuff seems to be uniquely aggressive in North America, since it doesn't seem to be a problem outside of this market. But there would have been possibilities to license the name, but at a cost. And I just didn't want to have a change of legal team make sudden rash decisions 3 years from now that would impact that. So we felt, going with something a little more esoteric but also meaningful would be a better option for us long term. So
I like it.
So that's the explanation of the name.
I think it's a great name. I like it. I mean, that's one.
Yeah,
thing.
I love it.
One of the reasons we ended up with Center Steer too was we were trying to avoid any down road concerns, and that didn't seem
absolutely
to be a word that was related or a phrase that was related, but I didn't think it was anything that they had copyrighted. So,
yeah. The very first working title I had was simple. It was just Rover Life as a placeholder for doing some layouts, and they're like, well, we do one life, so right off the bat, if you've got life in it, it's gonna be a challenge, and we own Rover and Land Rover, and probably every other word you're gonna throw at us. So,
yeah.
So they don't own Alloy.
They don't own.
And there was no one else doing that name. So that's where we're at.
Good, good. Well, good luck to you. Good luck to the magazine. I'm looking forward to having a copy in the mailbox very soon. Mark,
very shortly.
Mark just got a subscription.
I did.
As you were talking, he was
excellent.
Pulled out his credit card on his cell phone. Boom, boom, boom. He's done. So he's a new subscriber.
So, excellent. Thank you.
And I now deem you friend of the show, and you're welcome back.
Would love to come back. Always glad to talk Land Rovers.
Absolutely. Oh, that's why we're here. And bring Steve with you sometime. I know Steve.
I will. He's a character. If you guys know him, he's a character.
Oh yeah.
He'll need scotch first, but yeah, we'll get him on.
That's the beauty of the podcast. There are no FCC regulations, so
that's right.
I do limit myself to one beer during one podcast because that seems to be a good number. All right. Well, thanks again very much, Brian, for coming on the show. And folks, go out and check Alloy and Grit. That is www.alloyandandgrit.com. Of course, we'll have a link in the show notes, but if you're driving somewhere, I don't know. Well, you shouldn't be on the internet if you're driving.
Yeah, if you're driving, you're just going to have to remember it and type it into your phone while you're driving.
There we go.
And you see.
What is that app that you were telling me about, by the way? I didn't see a listing for it in the magazine, or did I miss it?
It's actually in the front page, the masthead there, where the contributors are listed. It's called Aurasma, Aurasma. And it's a fairly common one used within the industry for, a lot of publications use it as their backbone. It's just an image recognition technology. I think Hewlett Packard owns it now, but you can go to any of the app stores and download it. Aurasma.
Yeah, thanks. I see it. I didn't notice. That you pointed it out. Yeah. So for those listening, and you do get a copy of the magazine, go to the masthead. You'll see Alloy and Grit Winter 2017, and then there'll be a plus symbol, and it says this magazine is enhanced with augmented reality. So.
Yep. Cool. You just have to make sure you subscribe to our channel once you're in the app, so that it knows to unlock our pictures. Otherwise, it's Wild Wild West. It'll be hunting and searching.
Fair enough. That's good to know. Good to know. All right. Yep. There you go. Good reason to listen to the show. You get a little extra tip.
Absolutely.
The magazine, if you didn't know what that was and couldn't figure it out. Thanks again, Brian, and good luck
to you.
And hopefully you'll back on the show soon.
Hope to. Thank you.
So that's the podcast for this month, October 2016, show number 43. I want to thank our guests and contributors this month. Our guest was Brian Joslin of Alloy and Grit, the new North American specific Land Rover magazine. Go check that out. So I also want to thank our contributors from the Green Mountain State.
Hey, I'm Morgan. Thanks again. It's been fun. We'll push off our continuation of the Range Rover Classic. We'll be covering gearbox and transfer case next month. And, you know, check out seriesparts.com if you're looking for Series Land Rover parts.
And Defender parts now, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit of crossover in there.
Good.
I'll be expanding out soon.
Nice. So check out seriesparts.com. And also here in the studio from a long hiatus, Mark Garcia.
Yes, good to be back.
What are you driving now? And what's on the road?
Legally on the road?
You answer as you wish, sir. This is not a court of law, but it could be heard by someone in the court of law.
Well, in that case, give me a little leeway, because none of my vehicles that I'm currently driving are currently 100% legal.
Understood.
So you're not driving them, you're testing them.
That's the excuse I gave the last officer that pulled me over.
That's your story, and you're sticking with it.
Yes. But in some positive news about what I'm driving, Honey Badger is returning.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. And when's that expected?
We are down to legality, so could be 2 weeks, could be 4 weeks.
Good, 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 good. Well, welcome back to the show. Hopefully we'll see you. Hopefully it doesn't take South Africans coming to visit the country to get you to show up again. You know.
I'm trying.
All right.
I'm trying.
All right. I know. Everybody's got a life. Everybody's busy. And also, Harold's with us. Thanks, Harold, for contributing again.
Yeah, well, $10 is $10.
Well, I don't know who paid you $10. It wasn't me.
Come on. I make a nice reference to an old album and you can't pick it up. Oh, well.
An old album and I can't pick it up? What reference did I miss?
That's Bob and Doug.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Geddy Lee guest singing on their song. Hey, thanks, Geddy, for coming. Yeah, well, $10 is $10.
My apologies. So that's the podcast for the month. I hope you enjoyed the show. And sorry if you missed any references to Geddy Lee and Bob and Doug. Thanks for listening. Reminder to visit our website for past shows and show notes. You can connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, to give us some feedback on news and topics that we talked about this month. And now you can directly support us through the Patreon. Our Patreon account is at patreon.com/centersteer. We use the Patreon account this month or today to ask our contributors if they had any questions for Graham and Louisa, and they gave got some good questions out of that, and we'll have that special episode. I think it's going to be a special episode. Not sure what I'm going to do with it yet. Soon from Graham and Louisa here from podcast headquarters. If you'd like to be a sponsor of the podcast, send us an email. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, even if you have just a picture of your Land Rover or something you're lusting after or something you're driving illegally, as I look at Mark. Until next time, I ask you to share the show with a fellow Land Rover fan. Thanks for listening. Wave as we pass by.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Editing pause.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm leaving this in. I might want to leave this one in.